Unfortunately, I have forgotten my iPad, so there are no slides. But that sort of makes a point as well that it would be really great to get some feedback on this morning's meeting. We know that people, by and large, enjoy what we're doing, but it would be good to hear how we could improve it, because in that way we can build teams to do these things, which spreads it out a bit so that it's possible to concentrate on different things and not end up with making up so much of it as we go along. Although that's not always a bad thing. So do feel free to talk about it. Give us some feedback. Make sure it gets to the right people. If it gets to David or to Rosie or to myself, we can take that into account and make the adjustments. By the way, that song I posted on Facebook this week, it rocks a little more in the way that Chris Tomlin does it. And also Bethlehemian Rhapsody, I don't know how many millions of views that has now, but that's on YouTube, but you need to look up Bethlehemian Rhapsody to get there. So, my theme. Well, before we get to the theme, I want to ask you about this picture over here. Picture by Chris Green, who does pictures from time to time, some just with pen and ink like this one, sometimes with colour. He's got a little website, he puts them up. And for his day job, he's a professor of theology, Pentecostal professor of theology. Now, apart from those who have had a week to work on this and haven't got anywhere with it, would anybody like to suggest which Bible verse this picture illustrates?
Is it "You will be with child"?
Well, you've got there. You've got halfway there. Just a little more than that, but that's great.
The one in Genesis about his head, his foot will crush you.
Yeah. Okay. This, if you like, is all the Advent and Christmas story all tied up in one little picture. God says to the serpent, "I will make you and the woman hate each other. Her offspring and yours will always be enemies. Her offspring will crush your head and you will bite her offspring's heel." At the cross, the serpent, the Satan, thought that he'd won, but he didn't. Because in that death and in that resurrection, in that journey, death was defeated, sin and sickness are defeated. And in the second advent, we're looking to that happening. Now, my title for this little bit is Enlarged in the Waiting. And I'm going to explain that to you. You'll obviously know that that doesn't come from the NIV. It comes from the Message Bible. And it comes from Romans chapter 8. Listen to this. Sounds a bit different to the way we would normally read it. Verse 16, God's Spirit touches our spirits and confirms who we really are. We know who He is and we know who we are, Father and children. And we know we're going to get what's coming to us. You'll get what's coming to you, yeah? An unbelievable inheritance. We go through exactly what Christ goes through. If we go through the hard times with Him, then we're certainly going to go through the good times with Him. If we go through the hard times with Him, then we're certainly going to go through the good times with Him. That's why I don't think there's any comparison between the present hard times and the coming good times. The created world itself can hardly wait for what's coming next. Everything in creation is being more or less held back. God reigns in it until both creation and all the creatures are ready and can be released at the same moment into the glorious times ahead. Meanwhile, the joyful anticipation deepens. That's not for turkey and pigs in blankets, but it's for the return of the King. Yeah. All around us, we observe a pregnant creation. The difficult times of pain throughout the world are simply birth pangs. But it's not only around us, it's in us. The Spirit of God is arousing us within. We're also feeling the birth pangs. These sterile and barren bodies of ours are yearning for full deliverance. That is why waiting does not diminish us any more than waiting diminishes a pregnant mother. We are enlarged in the waiting. Okay, we're enlarged in the waiting. Mary. They've got the halo up there. Not very keen on halos. And my objection to halos was always that it led you to think there was something special you could see about people who were very holy, that they had a halo. But if you're looking for some sort of symbolism, it's not a bad idea to put a halo over Mary. You're going to put it over anyone. When she was about 3 months pregnant, she went to visit her cousin, Elizabeth. And when she arrived and told her news, John the Baptist, who at that time was still in utero, leapt. Okay. And Elizabeth said to Mary, "Who am I?" Now, this is a younger cousin. Anything, there's going to be 40 years difference between them. He's a teenage girl arriving and coming to visit her older cousin who's about to give birth. And Elizabeth says, "Who am I that the mother of my Lord should come to visit me?" Mary was a remarkable and very special person. Even the angel said, "You're highly favoured." Actually, today, the kids in children's session will be working on the story of the Annunciation. They're actually building, courtesy of Lakeland's design, although not at the prices of their plasticine, a whole crib over the next 2 weeks, which they'll be able to take home. So they may need to clean their nails and wash their hands fairly thoroughly before lunch today. So the Annunciation is the big story, if you want to think about it, during Advent. If you read into Luke, and we haven't got time to do that this morning, you can put the story here against what Mary said. Okay, you can put this bit about the travail of creation against Mary's fantastic political poem. You know, Mary concentrates on the fact that the smart people, the intelligent people, the expensive people, the well-heeled people have been rejected by God, and God's looked at Mary. She didn't understand herself as being at the top of the pile. She saw herself as being at the bottom. And so you not only get that bit of the story later on, it's hardly surprising that Jesus talks about the Spirit of the Lord being upon him to set at liberty the captives, to bring sight to the blind. And it's not surprising that when he describes the kingdom, because that is what Mary is doing in Luke chapter 1, Jesus talks in terms of blessed are the poor in spirit as well. But yeah, I've said that picture sums up Christmas. But of course, we understand that Christmas isn't the Santa Claus stuff about being naughty or nice, which is sort of a dreadful, dreadful, dreadful thing to even put in the back of people's minds with a bit of a giggle. Because Either people believe it really doesn't matter if you're naughty or nice, or they really think it does matter, both of which things are wrong. And it's certainly not the John Lewis adverts or anybody else's adverts, although, like anybody else, I'm affected by the music. Some of it drives me nuts, but it was, I think, on Thursday that I was prepping this. Tom came in from school. Wendy was working on the crib. She's actually really enjoys making plasticine models and was working on it. And Tom came into the kitchen, "What are you doing, Grandma?" And he joined in. And it wasn't very minutes before he, being the ultimate singer of all time, was saying, "Alexa, play Christmas music." And so you'd got, all sorts of stuff around the house. And it sort of catches you, doesn't it? The sense of anticipation is there. And I think we can actually build on that. We can leverage that. Yeah. Okay, but then you can add something to it. If you find somebody who can show you how to get a hold of YouTube somewhere from someplace, you can actually be singing some good stuff, useful Advent stuff, "Come Thou Long Expected Jesus." Yeah? In fact, making Christmas puddings was built into the church year as well, when people didn't have the ability to read or to listen, and when there wasn't all this other stuff with a Coca-Cola lorry appearing, which is allegedly the start of Christmas. But looking forward, you see, the waiting, the growing. I don't know how many years, 700 years between the prophecy and Jesus being born. For Anna, who was an elderly prophetess, it was, 84 minus 70, minus 16, you know, she'd been a widow since she was a teenager. She'd been waiting 60 odd years. And what happened was, on the eighth day, they took the baby to the temple. And because Mary and Joseph were pretty poor, they paid the minimum level of tax, the minimum sacrifice, and just bought a couple of pigeons. Yeah? And first of all, Simeon, who gets the bigger promotion, came and prophesied and talked about Mary's future. But then this very elderly lady came up. Her name was Anna. And it says this: there was a very old prophet, a widow named Anna, daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She had been married for only 7 years and was now 84 years old. She never left the temple. Day and night she worshipped God, fasting and praying. Probably somebody with a sort of religious vocation would have been equivalent these days. That very same hour, so they're standing there, and she'd been off doing the shopping, been to her home. She just arrived, and she knew something was going on. Could have been a halo, probably wasn't. But there was probably that sort of tangible feeling that something has shifted in creation. Do you ever get that feeling that God is here? That you've come to a thin place where if you reached out, you could touch him. And you wouldn't be surprised if you turned round and there Jesus was behind you. But it was just like that for her. And she's 84 years old. When you look at her on the Lumo films, she hasn't got her dentures in. Because then they didn't have dentures. She's a lady who would probably have talked in slurred Aramaic, who was pretty much at the end of her life, had probably lived well beyond. And it said, that very same hour she gave thanks to God. And you know what she did? She spoke about the child to all who were waiting for God to set Jerusalem free. She'd got a network. There was a network of old ladies, people who were on the outside, people who weren't terribly involved in what was going on, certainly had no status with the Pharisees, Sadducees, teachers of the law. any of that lot. But there was a network of people who were waiting for the kingdom to come. And you know, it's not a bad idea to have a little reflect this morning and think of the fact that there might be a network that we don't know about, of people we would never consider in this county, in your town, possibly even in your neighbourhood, who are waiting for the kingdom of God to come. Wouldn't it be great to be led to those who are waiting for the kingdom of God, to be stirred up and join them in their longing and being enlarged in the waiting? This whole business of longing for better, I think, is a pretty important thing. And excuse me if I read a fairly long piece from the Bible. This is from Isaiah 65. And I think I'm starting at about 16, 17. This is what Isaiah says. And of course, we could have had this reading, or we could have had the one from Isaiah 11, where it talks about the lion and the lamb laying down together. But I think this is just about the most fantastic Christmas list possible. Okay, if you want to formulate a list of important things. See, I will create new heavens and a new earth. The former things will not be remembered, nor will they come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in what I create, for I will create Jerusalem to be a delight and its people a joy. I will rejoice over Jerusalem and take delight in my people. Number one, the sound of weeping and of crying will be heard in it no more. Never again will there be in it an infant who lives just a few days. Yeah? First funeral I ever took was of a little boy who had died just before he'd been born. And talking to his parents, the second advent, the fact that Jesus is coming again and he's going to change everything, was pretty important. The one, or an old man who does not live out his years, the one who dies at 100 will be thought of as a mere child. The one who fails to reach 100 will be considered accursed. The norm will be a good long life. And of course, you've got the contradiction there with eternal life as well. But anyway, but here's the thing. They will build houses and dwell in them. They will plant vineyards and eat their fruit. No longer will they build houses and others live in them. No longer will people have to default on their mortgages. Yeah? No longer will there be people who are homeless. Or plant and others eat. For as the days of a tree, so will be the days of my people. My chosen ones will enjoy the work of their hands. They will not labour in vain, nor will they bear children doomed to misfortune. Yeah? Just imagine, in the deserts of Africa, in the places where unemployment is the norm, where you scratch a living to look at this, there is a day coming when children will not be doomed to misfortune. For they will be a people blessed by the Lord, they and their descendants with them. Before they call, they will answer. While they are still speaking, I will hear. It's only in the past 18 months or so, past year really, I've thought very much about this as I've been looking at the issue of plant-based diets and discussing quite energetically sometimes this with other people. But it talks about this. The wolf and the lamb will feed together. The lion will eat straw like the ox, and dust will be the serpent's food. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain. Yeah, we know it's a sentimental picture for now. The idea of the lion and the lamb and the wolf and the little child playing with them and being able to stand on a cockatrice's den, whatever that is, without being harmed. But that's the story that we're invested in. That's what we're believing in, that really does make things different. Of course, out of this, it's not terribly difficult to think about, on one end, you'd got the wise men. By their standards, they were wise. They understood as much as anybody else did about the world. And on the other side, you've got the shepherds. Now, the shepherds were dirt poor. They were low status. They were doing the kind of jobs you could do these days if you've got a criminal record. Nobody wanted to be stuck on there. And they've got a bad reputation as well. You know, even Jesus uses them as an example of bad behaviour. Talks about the hireling who flees when he sees the wolf. Talking about these kind of shepherds who weren't sheep owners. They were people who were just paid minimum wages to be night watchmen. But there, they didn't know it, these shepherds, but they were waiting for Jesus. The rich guys, they thought, well, we don't know whether they were rich or not. We know that they brought a load of stuff to Jesus. Pretty impressive presents. But they were looking for Jesus as well. And if you think about the offer that's here of a world made right, a world made perfect, then it isn't difficult to believe that everybody, if only they understood it, is really waiting for Jesus. David Attenborough, he'd probably be quite offended if we said this. You know who you need? You know who you need to meet? You need to meet the King of all creation. You need to meet Jesus. And to Chris Packham, oh, I would so like to get that guy up against the wall. And to say to him, mate, Jesus is the answer for the world. And even to Greta Thunberg, do you ever pray for these guys? Do you ever think about the fact that what they need to do is to see a star pointed in the direction? And if they're too thick to interpret the star, then to get shaken out of their skin by meeting heaven's army, complete with band. Yeah? And your friends, your relatives, my next door neighbours, the people I talk to, family members who are far away from God at this time and are not thinking about it, thinking about all sorts of other things. Really, they're waiting for Jesus. If you can't have an angel, you have a star. If you're no good at being an angel, at least you can have a little twinkle. Yeah? It might be a role for us as stars to either tell them the news or show them the way. Now, how do we leverage this in Advent? Problem. Forget about Mary, the mother of Jesus. Think about Mary, another Mary, and her sister Martha. Famous story. I understand this really, really well. I'm so much in favour of Martha's. Mary's can be a real nuisance. I'm glad to be married to a Martha. I'm glad to be married to somebody who on Christmas Day really avoids anybody else getting involved with the process. Really in favour of it. And Wendy will spend the whole of the morning stuck in front of the cooker, issuing directions that gradually get more and more explicit as the glass of bubbles goes down that she's drinking, and just looks after the whole thing. But you know, there is a problem with the Christmas period. We would all like to be a Mary. We would all like to sit at the feet of Jesus. But we're stuck in a Martha world. And I think if you were to choose any time of year when the Mary-Martha role is pushed, when you've got to go to the kids this and you've got to do that and you've got to get the last presents and you've got to be in because of the Amazon delivery, and then you want to do this and you want to do that and you've got to shift all the beds around because visitors are coming, and one worse than shifting the beds around because the visitors are coming is remembering to get all the presents and parcels in the car because you're driving hundreds of miles and ridiculous traffic on the M5, M6 or wherever in order to be a part of Christmas. How do you get a Mary moment in that area? I am not an authority on this, because I am a work avoider when it becomes Christmas. I try and find a meeting to prepare for. It means I have to shut the door and sit quietly. But here are the things. Just a couple of suggestions. Number one is, actively try and control the playlist. Okay? Control the playlist. If you look and you search, I think it's probably on the second page on Google, if you search for Advent songs, Advent worship songs, there is a list of about 40 or 50 songs that we could have sung this morning. And they're great, and there are things that you wouldn't think about normally as being Christmas songs. But you think about that one, Waiting Here For You. Put it on your playlist. Put Come Thou Long Expected Jesus. You can get it. Put it on a playlist. Find things that you can have that you put in the car so that even while you're doing the chores, your mind is turning towards the one who will come. That's why we had the lion and the lamb this morning, to point us to the big story about Christmas, that it happened once and it's sort of going to happen again. Then watch this thing with the whole Christmas happiness thing, because it is facile, it's really rubbish. You know, they send people out to visit Great Ormond Street Hospital, don't they? Big thing around Christmas. And you've got dying kids who are being taken to Disneyland here or there, which is great. If it's all you can do it with a loving heart. And I'm sure Jesus would have put money in the box for that as well. But we're not invested in dealing with the world as it is alone. We are expecting that there is going to come a day when that kind of stuff won't happen. There will never again be an infant who lives only a few days. It's the gospel that we believe in. It's the possibility of change. It's the chance of being something different. And then this one got sort of reinforced for me this week, just on one particular day, about doing like stars. I was in Waitrose, deciding that I would have a very heavy lunch. And so I bought my salad and took it to the office because I had a meeting with Dave. But as I was doing that, somebody came up behind me and said, hello. They were in their Specsavers uniform and said to me, oh, I'll see you in a couple of weeks at the Christmas Connection thing. I didn't know about it and I booked something else, but we've changed what we're going to do so that we can come. I thought, fabulous. Has somebody been out there being a star, pointing the direction? And then a little while later, I was walking up just past where Revelation Bookshop used to be, and coming towards me were a group of people, including one lady who was on the same Alpha course as Rolf and Karen, 2008, I can place it well. who actually, out of her group of people, said loudly enough, "Hello, Dave," for me to turn and notice her as well. Somebody else, sorry? It was the mother of a colleague of yours, I think. Yeah, I can't remember her name. But that was what, in 5 minutes, those connections had reminded me about what happens. And guys, so there are my three things. Find Mary moments. Don't give up on longing. Just engage with it. Take the pain. Pray into it. Be enlarged in the waiting. And number three, if you can't be an angel, at least do like a star. And get people into an environment where they might be able to hear a bit of the story of Jesus. I want to guarantee to you that we will probably have the smallest, quickest carol service in town. Right? It will last half an hour. It will be after canapes and followed by conversation and drinks. And if you can start by being a star and pointing people in the direction, then you might have the chance afterwards to be an angel and tell them where to find the Christ child. It's a great idea, isn't it? And of course, there are a crowd of people who would rather join us for our homespun Christmas, of which the details are a great secret, because it's all planned and totally ready to go and complete and finished. But you know what that's like, just what, 3 days before Christmas, 22nd? Yeah? It's the opportunity to families to come together and to come back to the cradle. There'll probably be a cradle there, a baby. There won't be the blanket that's at the bottom, because that's my daughter. She doesn't know we've got it, and I've got to take it and put it back in the cupboard where I found it. But yeah, that's it. So be enlarged in the waiting. Three ways. Find Mary moments. Engage in the longing. And do like stars. Let's just pray. Come, Lord Jesus. We've got a moment or two. Why don't you pray with somebody next to you that God will make this Advent a real time of waiting and preparation for Jesus to come.